This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. We should start a dino scoop.
Yeah.
Talk about dinosaurs every week.
Dinosaur watch.
Yeah.
And there any new ones?
Nope.
Nope. No new dinosaurs this week.
We had dinosaur week once.
We did do a dinosaur week. Mm-hmm.
You could do that for Jurassic World.
Two.
Oh, man.
Two.
And three. World.
Also.
Fallen Kingdom.
Or Smash Brothers. It has a single dinosaur in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yoshi. Sure.
And his brothers.
All right.
That's true.
Let's
or sisters.
Let's do a scoop.
Are we done?
Yep. That's all the scoops we have for you this week.
What?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne.
Hey.
And for the first time, Lily Zaldivar is joining us. Welcome,
scoop,
Lily.
Scoop, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You don't have to say it.
You may know Lily from the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast. She's on our video team. She's a big Nintendo fan. Also a Cuphead expert.
Yes.
I think so. So
I think the only person I know that beat Cuphead.
The only person.
Really? In the office?
Yeah, who else beat
Barrett Cuphead? Mitchell.
I don't know them.
Never heard of them.
But yeah.
Story checks out.
Well, we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Luigi's Mansion. It's time. Everything comes back around again. We're going to talk about IGN reviews and how they get made. But first, late last week, Nintendo had a direct, and it directly told us that Smash Brothers is coming this year to Switch.
It didn't directly say a name.
No, it did not. It indirectly said Smash Brothers, the franchise, the series, is coming to Switch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's some confusion. Is this a new Smash Brothers game or is this Smash Brothers for Wii?
You settled that already in a conversation earlier.
I had a conversation with Philip Musin, our Nintendo editor, about it.
What did you guys decide?
He believes this is an all new game.
Hmm. I do not.
You do not think it's an all new game? This is what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
Round one.
So I admit I immediately assumed it was the Wii U game, just because I assumed since the Wii U was kind of a neglected console, there are several good games that were released for it that Nintendo would want to get in front of a wider audience, like Mario Kart 8 and like Smash Brothers. So I assumed it would be the Wii U port, but maybe it's not. I don't know. What do you guys think? Justin thinks it is.
Well, I kind of want to immediately walk that back after having said it. I don't know. And this was my hot take on Twitter afterwards. It's like the first time in my life that I almost wish for a port or a definitive edition instead of a new game, because Smash was split, right? And so the 3DS version had its own single player mode, and the Wii U version had a different mode, and they had all different stages. None of the stages repeated between the two games, and so there's an opportunity to do a definitive, version of Smash 4 on the Switch that brings in, all the levels and all the modes, and then add in Splatoon characters and a few other goodies. And yeah. does that equal a new game? Like, now we're into the philosophical question, yeah. Damon, is yeah. what is a new game?
Yeah, Street Fighter 2 versus Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
But like, a Splatoon 2 is like, it's a really, really wonderful game, but it's not much of a, like, it's Splatoon 1.5 in a lot of ways, right? So I think that's kind of how they're thinking about
it. Well, kind of. I mean, Splatoon 2, the difference between Splatoon 1 and Splatoon 2 is going to be that Octo expansion. Mm-hmm. Like, while the single player in Splatoon 2 is pretty much a tutorial of how to play the game, the Octo expansion is 80 stages, and it dives deeper into the lore of the whole Inkopolis.
The deepest, this was announced the same. The deepest lore.
Yeah, this is another announcement same from last week. Yeah.
But I personally think that with their Nintendo's like high-end games, I don't think they would port those games. I think that they've directly, like, but then you, the philosophical yeah. question, what equals a new game when you have stages, the same characters?
Yeah.
But I think that...
But they ported Mario Kart.
That's true. They did port Mario Kart, but I think that when it comes to like a very high-end game like Super Mario Odyssey, Legend of Zelda, Metroid Prime 4, I think Smash Bros. Fits into that category, that this game is so important to them that they want to make a new game.
I don't want any emails about how we say Smash Bros. Instead of Smash Bros.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Sorry.
It's already...
Never apologize.
It's already too late. They have already written and sent that
I think
email.
It's funny.
I didn't know that was a point of contention.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't even think about it.
Smash Bros. Is more common than Mario Bros.
Well, okay. Yeah.
I say Mario Bros. And there's comments on every episode.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Every time you say it?
Yeah. There's also comments of just delete Justin off the show. So
I was thinking it's been a while since we've gotten a Super Mario Brothers game since Wii U, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Well, new Mario Super Odyssey. There's no brothers in it. But now Luigi is in it.
Yeah. Everyone always talks about the new being the weird thing. We've gotten four new Super Mario Brothers games, but they also include the brothers.
Yeah.
And then the standalone Mario games don't. Mm-hmm. I've never thought about that.
Yeah. Okay, so the new Smash Brothers for Switch could or could not be an all-new game. Lily, would you expect it to have the full roster of the Wii U game, at least?
Yes, I believe so.
There's some licenses that need to be re-upped, like Pac-Man. Yeah.
I think those...
What are the weird ones in that game?
Cloud, Bayonetta.
That's right, those are good ones.
But I think I think we'll start with like the main roster plus the Splatoon kids, and then maybe in the future we'll get the, you know, Bayonetta, Pac-Man, Sonic... Like
it's
kind of
crazy
later.
The Splatoon kids weren't in the Wii U one.
Do you think
by the end?
I think it's because they haven't been as popular until now. Like, I think they finally realized that Splatoon is actually worth something to them, like value wise.
Isn't it true that those kind of generic Splatoon characters that are going to be in Smash are not as popular as like some of the other characters in Splatoon?
Well, I mean, like they're the like the main. Yeah, the hosts are probably the most important people, but. As the like base characters that you always see in posters, those are the most two iconic characters, and that's who we also get in Mario Kart.
Squid Girl and Squid Boy.
Yeah, the Squid Kids.
They did confirm that Sakurai is coming back. He's been working on Smash in secret for a while now, so that's great news. I was surprised to see them not lean harder into that in the direct and just say, "Oh, by the way, you know it's coming from so and so." But he confirmed it on Twitter.
He's a lifer.
That's awesome.
Well, but, you know, it's like the last game, the Wii U and 3DS one, just was famously incredibly challenging. And after it came out, he's kind of like, yo, I'm not doing this anymore. It's like Daniel Craig, every time he makes a James Bond movie, he's like, nah, I'm done.
So, and right before that, he had done... Yeah, totally. Yeah. Right before that, he'd done Kid Icarus.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig?
Yeah.
No way. It's like a Miyazaki film.
Craig is responsible for those crappy controls.
Huh.
Something that Hold does, you know, put a tick box in, oh, this is probably going to be a new game, is that Smash was not a super, super late Wii U game. It was 2014. So that was 4 years ago.
Well, are you sure about that?
No.
Because 2015 sounds right in my mind.
Let me look it up. No, as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, that may not actually be right.
Do you think that the last Smash Brothers was called for Wii U and 3DS? Do you think that was a new game compared to Brawl?
Oh yeah,
I think so.
That's my conspiracy theory, by the way. My conspiracy.
But they
theory.
Are similar, right? The series is just about expanding characters and new levels.
Yeah,
and
that's the hard part. That's where it's like, oh, is it going to be a port or is it going to be a new game? It's like, well, technically, it is a new game because you'll probably get new stages, probably get new items, and probably get new characters, but you'll still get. Pretty much, Wii U and Brawl people.
I just wanted to clarify.
I think 4 Wii U and 4 3DS was the worst name.
No, it's so clever because like it's also Smash 4. It's a pun.
No, that's cute.
Oh,
I like that.
I never put
that
together.
I get it.
Super Smash Brothers 4 Wii U.
But the other ones aren't numbered anyway. So I would really like a new name.
But my conspiracy theory is that's how they're going to dodge the whole discussion we're having right now. Is it's going to be Super Smash Brothers for Switch,
five Switch,
and then it's going to have some new characters and some new stuff in it. Then it's up to you to figure out like is this like a 4.5 version or a port or
maybe
something
it'll be
new?
Four Switch, but the F in FOR is a number 5.
Ooh boy, no the Switch, it'll be four Switch, but uh-huh. Then the S in Switch will be a 5.
Maybe it'll be Super Smash Brothers for Wii U for Switch.
That's Goldfarb's joke.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Well, he's not on this episode, so
that's true.
My joke now.
Do you think
taking him back.
The past couple years, Nintendo has focused on one game for E3 and like designed its whole booth around that. Do you think it will be Smash Brothers this year?
No.
No, I think they did two, like, they had a really big stage this year, and one half was competitive. Or like they had a stage for competitive stuff,
yeah.
And then the other side was Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
So I think the competitive side will have Super Smash Bros. And will also have like Splatoon and ARMS. And then the other side, I think, will either be like their biggest announcement, which you know might be Pokemon, might be Metro Prime 4 if we ever get lucky with that, or something completely different that we haven't heard of.
I think they did Zelda 2 years ago and Mario last year out of necessity and desperation. Like Nintendo, I mean, last year, by the time last E3, like the Switch was already.
But it worked really well.
Yeah.
It did work really well, but I just like now they have a whole lineup of games that they want to champion again. And I think my guess is that they'll go back to this.
I believe the year before that was Amiibo. Mm. And remember when
Mario
were introduced to Amiibo?
Mario Maker.
Mm-hmm. Mario Maker was a big section of that, I think, same booth.
Was at
E3. Yeah, I mean, they might do like separate, like they'll go back to the standard, but. They'll have like pictures of their characters that they really care about, like iconic characters. That might be it.
I mean, Smash kind of like as a booth theme works really well for them because you can have all the different Nintendo areas and decorations, but you can also have a competitive area where people go up and compete.
Yeah,
in Smash. I mean, so
I'm hoping they have.
That's
Luigi's
like the
Mansion
easiest
there.
Thing for them to do. Well, yeah, if they have another theme and it was 100% Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, I would lose it. I'd take pictures all over the place. I'd be like, oh, can't come into work.
Because there was a new old Luigi's Mansion game announced too, which is they're porting the GameCube Luigi's Mansion.
Hold on, you're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
No, I'm right in the right place.
We're not talking about that yet.
I'm reading your paper.
Speaking of the roster in Smash Brothers for Switch, we have a disturbing suggestion from one of our listeners. They didn't provide their name because their suggestion was so disturbing they didn't want to be
anonymous.
Disturbing as those werewolf babies?
Yeah. They say, hey, Cameo Pogs, love your show. I've been thinking, how likely do you think it is that we will see some Illumination characters in the next Smash Brothers?
Nope.
Seems likely to me that this is part of the deal for them. Nope. Illumination being the movie studio making the Mario movie.
Nope.
Maker of Minions.
So first of all, Cameo Pogs is an anagram for GameScoop, and that's really well done.
Yeah.
Good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what were you saying?
No.
You say no.
No.
You hope not, or it won't happen?
I don't think it will happen. I actually think that the Rabbids would show up faster than the Minions.
Rabbids would be much like more welcome than
What's the difference?
Yeah. Even though they're the European Minions.
Good question.
I almost answered that as serious as possible. Yeah. And then
you see, Sam.
Well, then.
Yellow,
white. The Minion
one's
lore
a
clearly
and
dictates.
One's a thing.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the Minions would be. I don't think they're going to show up in Smash.
No, you don't think so?
No. But maybe someone will mod them.
Well, yeah.
The interesting thing to me is like, should Smash become like a celebration of all video game mascots, or the ones that you know Nintendo is able to negotiate deals for, or should it mostly stay in the Nintendo family with like the odd
every
Smash game ever since Snake showed up in Brawl has had more third party characters than the one before. I mean, I guess there's only been one more since, but like that's the direction they're trending to, right?
So. Yeah.
This one could have Rayman, could have
Geralt,
Crash,
could have Crash.
Yeah, they did announce the Insane Trilogy is coming to Switch. Is that right?
Yeah.
And they usually like there's usually like one, I don't know, like Wii Fit Trainer esque, just completely off the wall character. So I'd like to see maybe the Dragonborn from like Skyrim. Or just
I was thinking
like
there's
that.
Probably characters in Zelda and Mario from last year which are weird that will be in it, like the big Korok guy or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh, I would see him as like a trophy.
Yeah,
dude.
But there's got to be some other. Yeah, Hestu
in Smash. I'm gonna start that.
And he throws dookies at you. And then there's like weird characters in Mario Odyssey too, right? Yeah. There are some new
like Pauline. Yeah.
I mean,
be good.
Maybe Cappy.
Maybe Cappy
just on his own.
Yeah, just Cappy.
Just on his own.
Well, Cappy, you know, Cappy can handle himself.
Yeah, I don't know.
He'll be like the alternate version of Kirby, where instead of Kirby becoming you. you take over that person.
That's a good point. If Kirby and Jigglypuff can be in there, what's wrong with Cappy?
Yeah. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just trying to
B-tier Pokemon and
work out the functionality.
That's true. You only get Lucario's A-tier.
I don't know. I don't think minions sound
Lucario, and Greninja.
Minions sound that impossible to me. Illumination is the animation studio making the Mario movie.
Yep.
Whatever that.
Yeah, that's the tenuous connection.
And Illumination does what? Despicable Me, Minions, Secret Life of Pets. They're doing the Grinch.
Maybe the Grinch will be in it.
Yeah, maybe.
Confirmed.
Maybe. Starring Benedict Cumberbatch as the Grinch.
What?
Yeah, he's the new Grinch, right?
Yeah, he's the voice of the Grinch. Watch the trailer. It's actually pretty. It's pretty
they just
funny.
Painted him green. It's weird.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Everything else is CG.
Yeah.
Everything except for him.
Just a green Cumberbatch up there.
Yep. I don't know. As much as we might not like the Minions, it is far and away Illumination's most successful movie. It's over $1 billion movie, just that one.
The Minions?
Yeah.
The first one?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. I know.
Over Despicable Me.
And the other point is that Nintendo has struggled to, you know, even though the Switch is very successful, they're struggling to attract younger gamers, which is what Labo is all about.
You make a good point.
They should put Fortnite in it.
I rest my case.
It's like middle-aged mom sharing minion memes on Facebook and then young children that like their gibberish hijinks.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Gibberish jinx.
Bringing in minions just to appeal to the younger audience.
You
Nintendo.
Could do a kind
Don't
of like,
do it.
You could do it in Ice Climber's thing where it's like three minions stacked together as like one fighter and then
that's true.
And all kinds of goofy situations.
Are we still talking about this?
But if there's minions and Rabbids in it, I don't know, that might be too much.
I think Rabbids over minions.
I would
love to see Rabbid Peach in.
That Rabbid Donkey Kong is pretty great.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, that one's really good. All right, like Sam mentioned, a port of the GameCube original Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, we already talked about that.
Was also announced.
Finally.
But not for the platform you may have hoped. Brenton writes in to say, hey, GameScoop crew, Brenton from Dallas here. I've got a question for you. That Nintendo Direct got me pumped for the spring and summer, especially that Luigi's Mansion on 3DS announcement. However, I'm perplexed. Why not on Switch 2? Captain Toad is getting the release for both systems. Why is Luigi left in the dark?
Nice.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. Well done, Brent. He has a flashlight.
I was very happy to see the Captain Toad announcement as well, and I will play that again on my Switch. With new new Donk City content, or like a new level themed New Donk City. That was
He's
cool.
so happy.
There's a, oh, I wish I could He's recall lost. The exact stats, but the thing about these 3DS ports, like they ported Mario Maker and Hyrule Warriors, and maybe we've seen a couple other sort of unusual ports at 3DS. They've all sold like crazy. Like Mario Maker sold, I think it's over 3 million on 3DS now. So I mean that's why like they keep because it strikes me as odd too. I'm like
there's
move
like
on.
70 million 3DSs out there.
But as for the question is why not a Switch port? Also, I would guess is because those assets they're not HD assets, right? For the original,
maybe
version.
It's easier to keep them at that similar resolution on a 3DS.
Yeah,
but I wonder if that means like well we see like maybe. Pikmin 1 or like if like is this like a test bed for like other like GameCube to 3DS pipeline of like?
I mean, yeah, they're still announcing DS games for 2019. As of last week.
Yeah. Was it widescreen? I can't remember.
What? The Luigi's Mansion?
The Luigi's Mansion? Because
I don't remember.
Likely, they changed 2013?
It. They might have stretched
Excuse
it.
Excuse me, 2003?
No, I know it wasn't originally. It definitely wasn't originally. It's 4x3. So, like, I wonder how
it's
going to work on it.
Was it 2003? No.
2001.
One.
I keep holding out hope that because Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon is on Nintendo 3DS. So I'm hoping that they're bringing it onto the Nintendo 3DS, and then later we'll get both games for the Switch, but it will take some time to see how much excitement or how much the sales, like how much they get out of it. It all depends on
I think those games
that.
Are super boring, so I'm not super excited.
I've actually never played a Luigi's Mansion.
You're a Luigi's Mansion fan?
I am a Luigi's Mansion fan.
All right, so we've got
the 3DS one.
We got
really
fan thinks it's boring, never played. Yeah.
I think Lily makes a good point though. Like, there's already a connection. Like that franchise already hit 3DS, and I don't recall off the top of my head how that game performed, but maybe that did all right. And so someone said, "Well, let's just put the other one on that same platform where the sequel did okay."
Yeah, it did very well when it came out, and it's a lot longer than the first Luigi's Mansion, so it was very popular.
And that was a knock against it for me.
That was longer.
Yeah.
It doesn't end sooner.
I think that game is very pretty. Yeah. It was an amazing looking game, and it was in 3D. You can use the slider, you know.
Yeah, there wasn't
before Nintendo abandoned that.
There's no specific reason why I never played the original, and it has a really cute.
Reason why you didn't play it.
Mario.
Because everybody was like, "Why are we playing game with Luigi Mario-y. Walking slowly through something when there should be a big?"
It's all freaked out. You have a vacuum, and it's weird. Yeah, but that's why it's great.
I like weird Nintendo.
Weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Now give me weird my Waluigi well. Game.
We also,
what's your pitch for the Waluigi game?
Waluigi's Fancy Mansion, and it's a dating sim.
Fancy. It's a dating sim?
Yeah.
Who's going to date Waluigi?
A lot of
you.
People.
Well,
he always has a rose. Like in Mario Aces, he pulls out a rose when he does well. In Mario Party, he pulls out a rose.
I think he bought that rose himself.
Maybe, but he's a true romantic, so at this point, a dating sim for him sounds great, and he just never finds love. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of Waluigi.
Mm-hmm. What makes the mansion fancy?
Because it's the difference between Luigi's Dark Mansion that doesn't have ghosts, it just has romance.
It's the upside down version of the castle.
Yep.
It's just fancy. Like the lights work.
Yeah, the lights work. There's no vacuum.
No ghosts.
No ghosts.
Yeah.
Only.
But there's one ghost you can
being
date.
Alone.
Yeah, one ghost to date.
And then also, not coming to Switch, there was a new Sega Genesis collection just announced today.
Scoop.
Another
Sega,
one.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Announced for PS4, Xbox One, PC. No Switch. It is a good collection of games. Sam did some honest to God video games journalism.
Yeah.
And
did some hardcore research today.
And compared the original, Sonic's Ultimate Collection?
Yeah, that's the last big collection. Although there's a Steam collection too, but when you guys look into the Steam collection, remember that that's not just Genesis games.
The Steam collection is different.
It's a bunch of other things.
Just other Sega.
I think almost all those games are on Steam, so let's just get that out of the way.
Yep.
They're available on Steam. But there is a Sonic's Ultimate Collection, Sonic's Ultimate Mega Drive and Genesis Collection on 2009 systems.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a Flashback console, which you just reviewed.
Yeah, last summer. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And then there's this. And this has the most Genesis games out of all those. That doesn't mean it has the most games, because those had, like, a Game Gear
that
game
Flashback
was on
console
the one.
Had
Flashback console was shady.
Master System, Game Gear games, and then Shovelware Trash that never appeared on any
But it had Mortal Kombat and stuff like that that's not on this collection.
True.
Yeah. This is mainly Sega
stuff. I found that really odd that the Flashback had more iconic games that like people would recognize, but this one doesn't. I mean, unless you've like owned a Sega Genesis, which honestly, like I didn't when I was a kid. I had a Super Mario SNES, so I'm in that majority for that side. So
I think the game collection's really good in this.
Yeah. It is a good
I really, and I even like the 2009 one a lot. Like I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's
the first
Sonic's Ultimate Collection was great.
I played Beyond Oasis and Rhystar and a bunch of games.
So how mad are you that it's not on the Switch?
Yeah, it just
I'm not going to get hung up on that. So that's like the only thing people say now. Why isn't it on Switch?
It's just stupid. Like why?
It doesn't make any
sense. It's just an unforced error. Like. Yeah.
I mean, they might be, because I saw on the Facebook, like, Sega would respond with, like, we're just focusing on Xbox, PS4, and Steam. And it's like,
because
that's a we're not comment.
Yeah.
We're not commenting comment.
That's why, though.
Virtual console something.
That's why it doesn't seem to make any sense. So actually, again, Philip, suppose that this is actually Nintendo that doesn't want a collection of 50 games and one $40
it's possible.
Package when you can sell them each individually on their forthcoming virtual console, $10 a piece, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's devious on Nintendo's part.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You guys know that Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is not included in any recent collections?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, why?
No one knows.
No one knows.
I think there could be because Michael Jackson's music is in.
Yeah, that's 3. What I was just going to say.
But that's like, I mean,
that's
like,
more
of
a joke than a reality thing. I mean, it is true.
Yeah, it is true.
But
I mean, like,
right now,
there's anything he contributed something to the soundtrack for Sonic 3, and he retained the rights to it? Like, Sega didn't just have the rights to that music? Like,
I find that so odd. Like, who messed up the contract on that one?
Yeah.
It's the Ice Zone, right? You can hear it even like samples. It's got like his voice in it.
But on Sonic's Ultimate Collection,
that might all be up.
He made darn sure that Sonic 3 was on it. Sonic himself said,
Sonic.
"No, we're not doing this without Sonic."
Mr. Sonic.
You know Sonic's actual middle name is the with a capital T.
Yeah, I did know that.
I didn't know that.
It's so Sonic it's the. It's from
his
console.
His initials
Wars,
are STH. Then.
Yes.
It's like Mario. Mario.
Luigi
Justin.
Mario. Luigi Mario.
Is that official?
Yeah, because they're the Mario brothers.
Mm-hmm. And there's three timelines.
Yep.
Well, and so like. When people say, hey, Mario, you don't think that it's not like they're just saying, yo, Claiborne, what's up?
Mm. Well, they say, when that happens around Luigi, it's really awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because he's like, Mario's my brother's name.
Justin, did you know these Sega Genesis collections always include columns and columns 3?
Yeah.
Never Columns 2?
It's because Columns 3, the revenge of Columns.
Yeah. Also, the Columns 3
is Columns 2 is Game Gear, right? Did I make that up?
Yeah. Columns 3, 2 turns out just was never released in North America.
Well, or on the Genesis.
Or on the Genesis. Yeah. It was a Japanese arcade game.
Weird.
Yeah, it was on like some arcade system, and then it was in one other collection, but Columns 2.
What collection?
You'll never play it.
No, Columns 2, that's the subtitle.
Yeah, colon, you'll never play it.
I also like Columns 3, the Revenge of Columns.
Yeah, that came out really late, too.
Yep. Yeah.
Like Sonic 3D Blast, is that what it's called? Anyway. It's a really bad 3D Sonic game for Genesis.
Put everything on Switch. Everything should be on Switch. Game.
I'm so excited to play Captain Toad.
Not all of it.
I'd
already put my Wii U away, so I didn't play it.
Yeah.
Wait, so the theme of that whole segment was that also Luigi's Mansion wasn't on Switch also. So this whole thing was...
Yeah.
I'm fine with things being on 3DS, all right?
I'm fine with it, too. I'm perfectly fine with it.
I picked my 3DS.
Dude, there's a new WarioWare coming out.
Woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, that's not on Switch.
Yeah, but that's okay for now. I mean...
I like WarioWare.
I don't know. I want Rhythm Heaven to be on Switch, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
It's like a different version of WarioWare.
I would like Rhythm Heaven.
A more recent and more powerful Nintendo Portable. It's my Switch. I just want to play everything on that.
I'm going back. I'm going back to DS Lite.
I have both of them.
Yeah, I'd be fine. If everything came out for DS Lite, I'd be totally cool with that.
I have a 3DS. How many models have they had now? A million of them. I have not the newest one that's got the biggest screen on it. And it's just hard. Like, I was playing Animal Crossing. I talked about it on Scoop. And, like, it's hard to get over that screen. Like, it's kind of dim. Doesn't look very good.
Yeah, I think the new 3DS look really good.
So the screens on the newer models do fix that. But, man, like, it was okay for the time. But, like, technology's kind of moved on.
When you compare a phone to it, it's like, wow.
Yes.
Oh, I played WarioWare Inc., the GBA version, and I played it on my Game Boy Advance SP.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Because that screen is just backlit.
Yeah, it's just backlit. It's so daunting to go back to that after playing like on the Nintendo 2DS. It's weird, but I love it.
You can see the big goofy pixels even.
Yeah.
I like how it looks.
That's the best WarioWare. First WarioWare is best. Really?
That one on GameCube is so good.
That's Mega Micro Games, I think it's called.
Yeah, and it's the same game basically, but with multiplayer stuff.
Yep.
And the multiplayer stuff
with
is
the
so
turtles,
fun.
The balancing turtles. My wife and I played that a lot in college.
Yeah, I played it like
she was. I had not wifed her yet.
Unwifed.
Would go on to become my wife.
Free wife.
That and Donkey Konga.
Would become your wife?
Yeah.
That's weird. You played a lot of Donkey Konga. I missed that one.
Yeah.
Did you play Jungle Beat?
Nah, I owned it. I didn't like it. Mm.
All right, moving on. We are in March, which means it's time to revisit our retro game library or the retro magazine library. And this time we're not reaching as far back as we normally do. Instead of the early 90s, we're going to reach back 10 years to 2008. I have the spring 2008 issue of Hardcore Gamer Magazine.
I'll hold up Kirby for everybody to see.
Super.
Look at the art.
Super Smash Brothers Brawl was the cover feature, and there's a big review. So an 18-page spread on this game. And I got to say... You guys, by 2008, video game magazines were not nearly as thick as they were in the early 90s.
Yeah.
This is like a quarter of what an EGM in 1992 would have been.
There were so many pages in EGM that they had to put an EGM 2 out.
Yep.
Yep.
Every month. There was two EGMs.
Yep.
And they were both like 300 pages.
And EGM 2
turned
into Expert Gamer, something like that. They changed it to just be a guide.
I remember.
EGM squared.
Anyway, they review Super Smash Bros. Brawl, gave it 5 out of 5. They also preview Mario Kart for Wii.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Is that considered a good one? People like Mario Kart for Wii?
Yeah.
Is that Double... No, Double Dash... So this is just Mario Kart Wii?
I thought it was Mario Kart...
Double Dash is GameCube.
Yes.
Double Dash is GameCube, and Mario Kart Wii is the one with the plastic steering wheel.
Mario Kart
that
Wii.
Is one of the top-selling games of all time.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't like the steering wheel.
I don't recall... I remember liking the DS one more.
Yeah, maybe.
Around that
which was Mario Kart 7?
Mario Kart 7.
No.
Yes.
That's a 3DS.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
right. It's difficult. No, wait. You're saying 7 is DS, not 3DS?
No, Mario Kart DS is just Mario Kart DS.
Yes.
Mario Kart
and 7 is 3DS.
Gotcha.
We did it.
Yeah.
We did it. There's also, an ad for the Xbox 360 exclusive JRPG, Lost Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
When
I don't even remember
when
that.
When Xbox was still trying to court Japanese gamers.
I kept trying. It was like that and like Blue Dragon was a few years before then. But
IGN gave it an 8.2.
Mistwalker made it.
Yeah, we liked it. It's I think former
Final
Square
Fantasy.
Enix. Yeah, there's a couple ads for Gamecock Games. Anybody remember this publisher,
Gamecock?
That spread up in the late 2000s.
10.
Game is for Insecticide.
See an IGN quote.
Yeah, which very well could have been for me because I definitely covered this game. Insecticide, featuring both heavy action and in-depth detective gameplay.
Definitely a Damon quote.
That's also like not even like a positive. You're just describing what's in the game. Yeah,
like you say heavy action 3 or 4 times an episode, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Ready for some heavy action?
All right, let's check in with the listeners for some heavy action.
No, there's a couple.
Heavy action.
There's a couple Gamecock games advertisements in here, and this is 2008, and later on this year, they would be bought and go out of business.
What was that? What was
Insecticide never came out, right?
Oh, yeah, this came out.
Yeah,
this
is I own it.
A DS game.
Yeah, I own it because I was running a handheld games website at the time, at this exact era.
Did you own Elf Bowling?
What were we going to say?
Gamecock, there was some controversy. Didn't they?
They bum rushed the
stage at the Game Awards. That's right.
At the Game Awards, I think in 2007, maybe they were trying to promote their new like game publisher label. And when Ken Levine was walking on the stage to either accept an award or present an award, they bum rushed the stage and like had all this like propaganda.
Yeah, man,
and
chicken suit. And then I think they thought it was one of those things that were in their head. Like, it's gonna be great. And then it was like really cringy.
But Ken Levine's like left standing there, like what? He like had to wait for them to leave the stage, and then no. Anyway. It's a different time.
How do you go out like that? Oh, my God.
And they went out of business.
And then I'm curious what Lily thinks about this. In their review of Smash Brothers Brawl, they call Subspace Emissary a big mistake. That mode.
Really?
Is that true? Is that how people feel about that mode?
The public's come around on this.
Really? Yeah. The public likes it now?
I think, in the beginning I hated it, and I think it's really fun now. Okay. It's just more, you have to think about, it's like a round of Cuphead where you have to like pay attention to your surroundings while also battling your foes. So that's what I think of that game or that stage now.
Well, I remember, you know, like originally it was like, oh, this is a much worse, you know, single player mode than we deserve. Hmm. And then they just didn't even do a single player mode. Everybody's like, well, that's not what we were saying. So now everybody's like, I want Subspace Emissary back. It did have good cutscenes and a good mashup of Nintendo characters in it.
I thought it was fun.
Mm-hmm. I always like the target breaking stuff. I think that's fun too.
That's actually part of, I mean, not to bring this around to what we were discussing earlier, that's part of the reason I'm anxious about if the new Smash is a whole new game, because I feel like they cracked single player in Wii U and 3DS with, they had sort of the big Subspace Emissary-esque mode, but then they also had the ticket mode, and like they had like 4 or 5 options for single player gameplay for whatever kind of game you wanted.
Hit that punching bag.
Yeah, they figured it out. Like
I love that punching bag.
Mm-hmm. Everybody does.
The baseball.
This is another Gamecock joint. You guys remember Hail to the Chimp?
Yep.
This was a political party game that was actually released at retail.
Did you review it?
No, I didn't review it. I don't. Probably like Eric Brudvig reviewed this or something.
Yeah, seems like a Brudvig game.
Seems like a 6 or a 7. They have a feature on niche gaming, and they have a definition of what they consider a niche, and it appealed to me because it says,
is that Indiana Jones?
There's some Indiana Jones. A niche. It's a niche film. No, he's like looking for like the whole. So he says, you may be asking yourself, what's a niche game exactly? This is a surprisingly difficult question to answer. Our modern understanding of niche game is best typified by the PS2 game Disgaea. Oh, it inspired millions of posts and heavy hype online, but it really only moved around 200,000 copies. Anything that inspires hardcore devotion, despite being likely to suffer relatively low sales and low print runs, fits the definition of niche we're using for this article. The most common genre for niche titles is RPGs. That seems about right. I guess maybe I'm just a niche gamer at heart.
Hey, on the cover, it advertises both new games and old games. What are the old games?
Well, in the back, there's I'll show you in a second here. Okay. They review Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword for the DS, which is cool. Do you guys remember how that one was played?
I just like how all the games for the DS at that time had things with DNS.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, the DS flip left like this. This is one of those games held.
Yeah, turn sideways.
Yeah, turn sideways.
And then so you're like watching Ryu on one side and, you know, drawing his path. With your
I played that game. Right.
Yeah, that game was good. Mm-hmm. That game was cool. Finally,
there was Advance Wars Dual Strike.
This is why they say old games too. They have a 2-page feature on Garfield for the Famicom that was never released in the U.S.
Wow, that looks awesome.
Yeah, it does look awesome.
Look at Garfield hamming it up.
The faces of Garfield.
I'm torn between like just professional respect for devoting a 2-page spread to that, but then also like, oh, well, I wonder why your magazine.
If Garfield would have been on the cover, it would have been fine.
Yep.
With that artwork too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Drawn like
color pencils.
Yes.
Realistic eyeballs.
They do short reviews of downloadable games. And do you remember this game Undertow for Xbox Live Arcade?
Yeah, that was the first game from Chair.
Did it precede Shadow Complex?
Yep.
Welcome. I believe it was free, or the demo was free in some way.
They gave it away for free to make up for Xbox Live going down over Christmas 2007.
Yes. And everybody got it.
Yeah. Yep.
I always like that because your character is so little, and it was you could explore these big advantages.
It's a big discrepancy. Hardcore Gamer gave it 1.5 stars out of 5. Yeah, IGN gave it an 8.7.
I thought Undertale was pretty bad.
It's a pretty big discrepancy.
It was pretty free, though.
That's
how you get it.
Yeah.
That's how you get that 8.
There's either you get that 8. Yeah, there's a preview of Burnout Paradise.
Nice.
Which was just re-released this week.
I wrote the strategy guide for that in 2009.
There you go. And on the back cover is just a picture of Kratos for the PSP version. I don't know.
Man.
Is that Chains of Olympus? I forget. Awakening?
Yes, I wrote the strategy guide for that as well.
That one, that's the PSP version?
Yeah,
and PSP. The Vita.
So.
PSP flashbacks, sorry. What?
I just want to point out that in spring of 2008, we were talking about God of War and Burnout Paradise and Smash Brothers.
Here we are.
10 years later.
10 years later. Same stuff.
Video games, everybody.
That's 2 out of 3 on that one.
I got to look at these Garfield screenshots.
2008 may also be the first year that Fortnite was at E3.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It made many, many appearances at that show.
All right, Lily, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to excuse you, and we're going to take a quick break. And in just a moment, we'll be right back with Dan Stapleton so we can talk about reviews. Welcome back, everybody. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Phil from the UK did. And he says, love the show. Just have a quick question, which I'm interested in. How is it decided who will review a certain game? With various offices across the world in the US, UK, and Australia, how is it decided which office gets which game? Here to tell us is Dan Stapleton.
Well, I think Justin and I can cover this one.
Okay.
Whoever, when the check clears, that determines.
No, it is largely arbitrary. I mean, it depends on a bunch of factors, like who is available, like who is not bogged down with every other thing they have to do, because a review is a big project. You got to put aside pretty much everything else and devote yourself to it, because there's not a lot of time to play a lot of game. And then you've got to capture the footage. You've got to write the review. You've got to put the whole thing together. So that's a big time commitment. It depends on who's available for it. Then within the pool of who's available, you have to look at who has the best knowledge. And if we have nobody on staff who has good knowledge of that particular game or franchise or genre, then we look for an external freelancer to handle it for us who is more knowledgeable.
Mm.
Yeah. So if you play fighting games. Racing
or
games.
Sports games.
And you have a college degree in writing. Please let us know.
Or I don't even care about the degree. If you can just write. You have to write.
You have to have a degree.
That's what's come to.
I don't have a degree.
To be a freelancer for Dan in this day and age.
No, seriously, like if you know how to write, like I don't care who else says you know how to write if you know how to write. Yeah, and it's if there are conflicts, like if two people want to review the same game, then I review it. No,
they fight.
I do pull rank every so often. No, and like it does come down to seniority sometimes. The senior people will have first dibs but they have less availability because
there's very little clamoring unless it's a Mario game,
right? Or if there's some like super big thing like Horizon Zero Dawn or something like that, or like a Naughty Dog game of some stripes. Like they've got a bunch of fans of some of these big franchises that are dying to
for
do
fans
it.
Of the genre.
Well, yeah. I think there's definitely an element of actually the four of us coincidentally have been at IGN a long, long time. But for some people that are newer, they want like to review that year's Call of Duty or Battlefield or Zelda or Mario. Like I'm over. I'm content to not do that again. But that was an important thing when I was earlier in my career to have the high, to do the high profile review and try very, very hard to do a really good job with it.
Yeah, and you want to make a name for yourself, get some exposure by having your name on a big review. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people notice.
For sure.
And hopefully impress your bosses along the way.
Yeah.
So
don't mess it up.
There are many more games coming out today than there were 10, 15 years ago. Are we doing more reviews or do we do about the same amount because most of those games our audience isn't going to be interested in.
Relative to 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, we do a lot fewer reviews now than we did 10 years ago. Because
more games now, but fewer reviews.
Right. So video is a big reason for that. Like it takes a lot longer to do a review with a video component than it does to just write something. Also, we have more of an eye toward quality these days. We try not to, back then we, it was kind of the policy to get as many reviews done as possible. And in order to do that, there's a spectrum of quality versus quantity and, speed versus good. And back then the philosophy was to be more on the try and review absolutely everything side.
Yeah. Yeah, that was policy when I started at IGN.
Right.
Which is before iPhone.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically when there was just PlayStation, Xbox, GameCube, and PC. Like, that was it.
Right. And those platforms had a much smaller amount of games coming out every month, every day. You look at Steam now.
Like, no digital distribution at all then.
I think Steam's about 10 years. Steam came out in, 2004? No, it was out a little bit before that. But anyway,
With Half-Life 2?
It didn't launch with Half-Life 2. It launched as a component for Counter-Strike.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But Half-Life 2 was the first game to, big game to acquire it.
Mm. Interesting.
So it was around, but it took a while for it to really spin up as a third-party, seller of third-party games. Mm. It was just Valve at first. But... and even once Steam was around, it still took a while for all these indie games to show up on it and just start flooding the store feed. These days there are 30 or 40 things released new every day on that platform.
Yeah.
To say nothing of all the games on the Nintendo eShop and the Sony store and the Xbox store. So it's just impossible to keep up with that. So what we try to do instead is do better quality reviews on a smaller number of games, more curated. We just pick out the ones that we think look like they have a potential to be good, because it's not really all that valuable to tell people this game that you'd never heard of that doesn't look very good isn't very good.
That's true.
We also have internal analytics that we use to make the determination whether our audience will care about a game by looking at the last game in that series or something like that. There's a lot of ways we have. We use tools. We don't just use our, innate knowledge.
Our gamer.
If we preview something.
Gamerdar.
If we preview something and it does poorly, then we know people don't care. Mm. That doesn't necessarily mean we won't review it if somebody on staff believes in it and thinks it's really cool.
Yeah, we always strike a balance between, delivering, if someone comes to IGN.com, what are they expecting from us that day? We have to be covering the big news and the big reviews, but then we also strike a balance between being tastemakers and trying to, sometimes we'll put stories in our cover slots that are covering games that we know will click worse than something else, but because we believe in that game and it's important to us to champion it and be a place for someone can come to discover something new and interesting too. And if someone wants to give a game a 9 because it's really amazing and excellent, then we have to stand behind that, even if there's a short-term hit to the pages that'll get.
Mm. And Celeste is a great example of that. That was pretty recent. That game wasn't really on my radar, but mm-hmm. Tom Marks had seen it and knew it was something special just by looking at it, and really brought it to my attention and made sure we got to review it. And when that game that's not something that our audience had heard about. I don't know if we'd even previewed it in any significant way. We took a chance on that one, being something that we could convince our audience was something they should pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. And then reviewing a game like that presents another challenge of marketing the review to the audience, right?
Right.
Which is something you've been trying recently, and actually putting the review score in the image, in the thumbnail for the review, right?
Right. It's something we're experimenting with right now. Yeah.
Celeste review. What does that mean if you've never heard of this game? But if you see this new game is getting a 10. Well, that's a little
right,
and maybe that is interesting to you.
Yeah, and that's actually what kind of kicked off this round of experimentation, because it's long been assumed people don't want the score up front because then people won't click in to see it.
Hmm. That's not like an IGN thing. That's a journalistic idea, right?
Isn't right. It's not something we came up with.
Definitely. Don't give away your story in your headline.
Right.
It's from newspapers. It's not from clickbait or the internet or anything like that. This goes back hundreds of years.
Right. So it's not burying the lead to some extent, but you don't want to entice people to read something early on without giving them everything up front so they just stop reading. Otherwise,
The first line of a short story is the most important one.
Exactly. You want to hook them in. But for a game like Celeste, like that whole thing, like people seeing something reviewed and wanting to know, like, is this good or not, depends on them wanting to know something about that game. But if they know nothing about that game, then they have no reason to click on it. They don't even necessarily know when they're scrolling by, like, what it is. So when we first put that one up, we didn't put the score in the image, and we kept track of, you know, we kept an eye on it anyway, and like not a whole lot of people were clicking on it. So like, okay, how do we convince people, hey, this is something special, this is something that that we really believe in, that you should check out, even though you haven't heard of it before. So then we put the score in the image, and a lot of people clicked on it. So, and you know, it's not, you know, you can look at that cynically. It's like, oh yes, we got more clicks at it, but it's more about, hey, we found something we think is really cool and want to tell everybody about it. And just saying Celeste review wasn't getting that message out.
Yeah.
And we, you know, so we did what we could to get that out there. Now the tests that we're running now are to see, like, you know, when is that effective and when is it not? So, you know, it could be that certain scores make sense to do that and others don't. People do like to see a train wreck. So
totally. Those
particularly
are
particularly low score
right.
Can also be attractive.
They're so fun to read or watch. I mean, I love reviews of train wrecks.
The hypothesis, which we'll see if it's confirmed, is that very low scores and very high scores, putting those in the art will increase clicks, whereas middle of the road scores may not. But we'll see. That's why tests are fun.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like there's a new Minions game, and if it gets a 5.5, it's like, well.
Yeah. But if it gets like a 1.5, then you're like, I got to see how bad this thing is.
Yeah. All right. This is Edward from London, Ontario.
Oh, twist.
Mm-hmm. He says, greetings, Damon and the GameScoop crew. I've been a longtime listener of GameScoop, as well as a longtime viewer of IGN in general, going back to checking out cheat codes for GoldenEye and Perfect Dark.
That's how we get everybody.
IGN 64.
Yeah, I think Per Schneider probably wrote those.
I've always enjoyed your many articles, videos, and podcasts over the years. I simply can't thank you all enough for all the great content you guys have provided. Keep up the good work. I purchased Wolfenstein 2 when it came out in October last year, played the first 2 to 3 hours, after which I stopped playing as I lost interest in the story and the run-and-gun nature of the gameplay. It wasn't until I started playing it again last week that I came into the massive turning point of the game. This has happened to me on many occasions in my life, from video games, movies, TV shows, where I seem to stop just before the moment where the game clicks and really takes off. So my question to you is, has this happened to you? And generally speaking, how much damage does this do to a game if it doesn't really pick up until a few hours in? I realize that reviews and word of mouth can alert people to this happening in a game and to stick with it, but wanted to get your thoughts on this occurring.
You and I both just picked up Wolfenstein 2 again.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Yeah, I don't know what part he's referring to, and it's probably a spoiler, so we don't need to talk about it. But
yeah.
I just left off at a pretty cool part, and I picked it up right away. I was like, oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the question.
Well, it also makes me think of Assassin's Creed Origins, which I think Justin and I both had the experience. I played several hours into it, and I was like, this isn't really grabbing me. So I moved on. But everyone who's played that game, you know, has nothing but great things to say about it. So
I tend to... Edward, what's his name?
Edward from Ontario.
Edward.
I actually kind of have the opposite experience of Edward, where sometimes there's games I'm enjoying enough. Like, I was liking Assassin's Creed Origins. I liked the new South Park, but I didn't finish either one. I got halfway through. And what I've done my whole life, I'll pick that game up in a year, start playing it again, and probably stop at the same. There's some games I've played halfway through like three times, because 2 years later, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give that another shot.
I'm like that with Earthbound.
Then I pick it back up, and I'm like, at some point, I just need to trust my gut and be like, look, I don't have a rational explanation for why, but this is just not my cup of tea, and just, you know, set it down and pick up something that I just ravenously can't get through, you know, can't consume enough of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it really depends on the context. Obviously, if it's a review, it's like, well, I got to play through this all the way anyway, so I'm kind of determined. Mm-hmm. If I'm not, I mean, these days, there's just such a wealth of possibilities out there. So I don't have as much patience for a game that takes time to pick up.
Yeah, like I agree.
It's gotta come at me fast and you know, impress me with something, or at least make it entertaining to get to the good part. You know, don't
or skippable.
Right.
Now, this is something that factors into, I think that's a problem that young writers have with reviewing games, is that you have to play through the whole game. So if you like the end of the game a lot, then you better explain that to people that are going to play the first couple hours or so and say, like, this is terrible. Mm. And, like, I know we have had some, like, infamous reviews. One was for Final Fantasy X2, I think it was a Ryan Clements review where he was like,
when there's like after 40 13. Hours.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it was. So it was like Ryan really liked the end of that game, but he really didn't like, it was like, yeah, it was 40 or maybe even 80 hours.
But that's like a pretty common.
It was like something crazy.
I don't know that we can even lay that at our reviewers' feet. Like that's a meme about Final Fantasy 13 is that once that game opens up after dozens of hours of kind of a slog, everyone kind of starts to enjoy it more.
Yeah, and so putting that in your review is really important, you know, saying like if you can put up with, you know, the first 8 hours of The Witcher 3, it really pays off, you know.
Yeah, and it's a lot to ask of people, I think, to play through. You know, I hate that argument in reviews, and I will strongly
guilty
push
of
back.
It.
Right. I think it is a common thing among JRPGs in particular, where they have just a very slow ramp up.
Absolutely.
But then people love them, and that's part of why I'm not a big JRPG guy. Is that I?
What's the other part?
No, just, I don't
like cute stuff. We know.
I don't have the patience to get through that. Just be when there are other games I could be playing for that 8 or 12 hours while I'm waiting for that one to be good. I could be playing something that's already good.
You could probably do that with JRPGs. Just play something on your phone and just wait for the cutscenes to roll.
You see it with you see this with television shows a lot, but the excuse there is that, you know, the cast just came together and the crew just came together. So the first season, like look, the first season's weird, but then this show's really good. And video games don't have that excuse really, because it's not like you make a game beginning to end.
Yeah, they do it the opposite way, in fact. In a lot of cases, they'll come back and do the intro after they've done everything else because they've
people
learned.
See it.
Right. Well, they've learned so much in making the game that they're able to then come back and you know, do or redo the intro to be more exciting based
especially
on all the stuff
tutorials. They know what they have to teach people and stuff.
They have to teach people, and they know how to impress people with what they can do.
Mm-hmm. I have this much time in my life, and for those listening on the radio, I'm holding my hands a little ways apart.
6 inches maybe.
That's how much time I have in my life, and in that time I have to cram video games and comics and board games and TV shows and all the stuff I'm into. So it's like I don't have any patience for stuff that's like just okay. And it's not a reflection on like maybe it's someone else's favorite game on earth, but if it's not speaking to me, why would I give it, you know, a second or third or fourth evening of my life? Like at the point where, again, like I can't articulate why I didn't like the second South Park, but I put it down in favor of something else. And it's like that alone is kind of an indictment of like I was done with it, right? Like,
and it's not necessarily that you didn't even like it. It's that you like something else more, or something else looked more
right. That's right. Like when there are more A pluses than you can possibly ever get through, like I don't have the time or inclination to go through very many B pluses. Like I'm watching Steven Universe right now, and it's like I think that show's amazing. It's incredible. I absolutely love it. So like, why would I ever play a game or do something that I didn't think was amazing and incredible that I absolutely love that I just can't wait to like, you know, watch the next chapter?
Yeah, and that actually gets to, you know, why people like to point out like, oh, you give high scores to everything. It's like, well, if you have or, you know, you barely use the bottom half of the scale is what we get criticized for a lot. But if you have the stack of games is say 10 high and like evenly distributed, and you're not reviewing everything,
that's the key.
Right. It's like the reviews that we do are not a random sample. We're doing the things that we think are going to be good.
If we reviewed everything still, we would be using the whole scale.
Yeah. A lot. So yeah, if you look at what comes out on Steam every day, there's a bunch of stuff in there that would definitely be in the bottom part of the scale.
And the reason why we review games that we think would be good, there's a little bit of explanation there too, which is very simple. It's the games we think that you might need to figure out whether you're going to play them or not because they look good to you too.
Right. They look good. Are they actually good? That's the question we're trying to answer.
Yes.
So then you expand that pile and it gets much deeper, and you're still only cutting off the same amount of games. It's like, yeah, you're going to get higher scores than you used to. Mm.
That makes sense. Edward has a PS for Sam. Says Sam mentioned in last week's show that he owned Mick Kids for NES.
Yeah.
That was one of the only games my brothers and I paused overnight to try and beat the game. Something I realize younger listeners of the show would have no concept of doing. We did that even here in the office.
I think we have a game paused right now.
Is it still paused?
Maybe.
Pear and a few of us have. There's the Super Inti, the really nice third-party Super Nintendo machine.
Yeah, it's just Super Nintendo, so it doesn't have save states.
Yeah, and then it plays Super Famicom games, so Pear brought in a bunch of his Super Famicom games, including Goemon 2, and we've been playing it overnight, and we get stuck on a boss, and you can't, like, save or anything, so we just leave it on
it's
overnight.
It's a really good game, too.
Very cool game. Wasn't ever released over here, that one in particular. All right, it's time to share what we've been playing, Who would like to go first?
We just finished Super Goemon.
Super Goemon 2.
I've been playing Into the Breach.
Still Into the Breach.
I still can't.
I like Into the Breach a lot.
It's a super addictive thing for me, just because it's constantly throwing new puzzles at you. You know, every turn is a new puzzle. Every time you play with a different squad makeup, you know, you've got three mechs, and it's a turn-based strategy game for people who haven't heard of it. But you get three different characters you're playing with. Each of them has different inherent abilities, but then you've also got those can be swapped out for other ones that you randomly get. You can also get different pilots you can put in them, which give them different abilities. So pretty much every playthrough is different and has different tactical possibilities that you have to adapt to and around.
You got good, right?
I got okay.
I saw you tweeting about, like,
yeah. I saw you bragging.
I might have to crank up the difficulty to hard.
Yeah.
Do we have any sense of how, like, FTL was a phenomenon, right? Like, that came out and sold like crazy. It was a massive Kickstarter success. I don't feel like I'm hearing as many people talking about Into the Breach. Like, there doesn't seem to be as much chatter on it.
I think FTL was a slow burn. Like, it took a while for that one to gain momentum.
Because the port to iPad and iOS and stuff was a big deal for it.
And that came with the game update, too.
But that was by the time that came around, everyone was already excited about it because
that's true. I was excited to play then.
I only ask because, like, I haven't played Into the Breach yet. I know whenever I do, like, I'm going to go down that rabbit hole deep. But I just respect the developer duo a lot, and I hope that game's doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if this one's going to achieve quite the FTL velocity, if you will.
Sure.
It's definitely, you know, got its hooks in me. I've got like 90 hours in it at this point. I'm sure some of that is you know, alt tabbed out and looking at other things, but it's a good chunk of time I've spent playing that game.
Would you do you think you scored it accurately?
I think so, yeah. Gave it a 9.
And Sam, you've been playing Wolfenstein 2.
Yeah, I started Wolfenstein 2 again. I got to beat that game just because I want to see what happens in it. And then I played I played Florence on phone, which I really recommend. You guys play that game. It's about 45 minutes long. It won't take you long to play it. And then playing some old games. We played Legend of the Mystical Ninja. I've been playing Yoshi's Island at home on the analog NT, and it's really fantastic.
It's a really good game. I was also playing an old game this week. I've replayed Shadowgate, the original, because it was released last year as part of the 8-bit adventure anthology.
Yeah.
It's a good package. It's got Shadowgate, Uninvited, and Deja Vu. So I just spent like, I beat it in like an hour and 45 minutes.
Game fact, right?
The other night. I looked up a couple puzzle solutions on some game facts. But I remember that game took me like weeks to play through as a kid, and I can beat it, you know, in less than 2 hours today. And then I saw the speed run. The world record speed run is like 11 minutes to beat that game. Even
speed running adventure games?
Yeah. I mean, it's like
he clicked the wrong pixel.
You're like like you're moving a cursor around with the D-pad, and the cursor only moves so fast. So that's you gotta have some patience for that one. But I have so many questions about the game. I love that game. You're exploring like an abandoned castle that's been taken over by an evil wizard, and there's just a few monsters around.
The name says, Shadowgate.
Yeah, but in one of the areas, you go underneath the castle, and there's this underground lake that's being patrolled by a shark. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the lake is a skeleton. The lake is only apparently waist high. Mm. So a skeleton is standing there holding out a key.
Cool.
But the skeleton is not reanimated. It's a skeleton. So, and then what you have to do is you get this sphere that you drop into the lake. It freezes the lake so you can walk out and grab the key from the skeleton.
Yeah.
But like so there's a shark in the lake. There's enough food and fish in the lake to sustain the shark.
What's this lake's ecosystem?
Yeah. The skeleton... Did someone walk out to the middle of the lake?
Plunk the skeleton.
Held out.
Here's my theory.
Did someone put it there?
You said a wizard lives there?
Yeah.
I think the wizard thinks the skeleton looks cool.
Yeah. Well, so the skeleton was there when the wizard showed up?
No. Wait, there was a wizard there, so clearly the wizard did it.
Yeah, the wizard did it.
Yeah, he's like, this is going to look awesome. My basement's going to have a pool with a shark, like James Bond style.
Okay.
And he's like, but wait. Let's put a skeleton in there.
That would look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense. All right, I have no further questions.
You just... I restarted him playing through Pillars of Eternity and having a tremendous time
with original,
it.
Yeah.
The sequel's coming out, and I was getting a little anxious. I'm trying to play through the original before the sequel comes out. And then...
It got delayed, right?
And then it got delayed. It's perfect.
Got some more time.
And that's actually an example of a game that I have tried playing 2 times now, and it's a little bit cursed. Like, my computer broke halfway through one run, but I'm sticking with it this time.
Because you punched the screen.
Bunch of screen. No.
Dan built that computer.
A different computer broke. Like, because that game...
That's why Dan had
You have a different computer?
One.
No. 3 years ago when I played Pillars of Eternity, at that time, my computer broke.
I gotcha.
And to me, that's... It's kind of a divisive game, but I think it's the best of all the computer RPG revivals.
Better than Divinity?
Yeah, I like it more than Divinity. Mm-hmm. I like the real time with pause combat quite a bit more than Divinity's very slow, very plodding turn based combat for my money. And I think the writing is significantly better too. And it strikes the exact right balance between being old school, you know, Baldur's Gate style, while still having sort of the modern niceties you expect in a game in 2018.
And Pillars is on consoles, the first one now?
It is. I can't vouch for the quality of the console version, but I know they did some thoughtful stuff. Like, it just feels like, how in the world are you going to play an isometric RPG on console? But they did smart stuff with, like, just how they map the buttons, and it's supposed to be pretty good, but I haven't personally played it. The sequel's coming to Switch.
That is awesome. All right, now we need Divinity on Switch.
I'm in this really, really wonderful cycle of, I told you, I don't have a lot of times in the evening, of Steven Universe and Pillars of Eternity and playing some board games, playing some Gloomhaven. That's what it's like. Sometimes, I don't know if you guys feel this way, sometimes I go home and I'm like, I don't really have anything. Like, I'm not watching any shows right now. I'm not really just kind of browsing the internet. But now it's like I got three really good things going. So
that's good.
Everything's coming up, Milhouse.
You're in a groove. There's strong interest in some sort of board game discussion show.
Amount of comments on Board Game Scoop. My Gloomhaven party is continuing to go well for those that are sending me concerned tweets.
I'm glad to hear it. And now it's time to play Video Game 20 Questions. Our question this week comes from Chris. Let the questioning begin.
Could this have been in this issue of Hardcore Gamer magazine?
Well, but that game covered old games and new games.
Yeah, so it can only cover up to what they knew about at that time.
Up to 2008.
Okay.
So was it before 2008?
To answer Sam's question, no, this game could not have been in that.
He hits a homer. He hits a fly, right? Fly ball. What's the terminology?
According to this, Devil May Cry 4 they knew about, so it's probably DMC.
That checks out. Or it's Smash for Wii U.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, I wonder if this is one of the ones. Whenever I'm on, Damien usually tailors it specifically to me, so it's almost certainly on. Is it on PC?
Yes.
All right, so there we go. You gave me a fair chance.
Is it either exclusively on PC or generally thought of? Is it associated with the PC platform primarily?
No.
Okay.
Interesting.
But it did appear on PC.
Yeah, it's on PC, but not a PC exclusive and not generally thought of as a PC-focused game.
Was this made in Japan?
No.
All right. I would ask you if it's a first-person perspective game, but apparently everything is, so I'm not
going to They argue about question. This outside of the show.
So. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
You could ask him would he consider it a first-person
game. But then he would say yes to everything.
If Fallout Shelter is first-person, where are you?
You're in a facility across the
you're
way.
You're the overseer. You're looking at it.
But it's in the middle of a mountain. It's digging down into the ground.
You're inside the facility looking at something, a camera view from over here.
So let me ask you this.
You're looking at a really nice feed of all the rooms.
If you're playing that game in a first-person perspective, you're telling me that they all live in a facility with no wall? The wall is missing?
It's glass.
If you're a security guard at a mall, you're looking at multiple video feeds at once. That's what it's like.
So that's what I'm saying. Like every game is a first-person perspective of somebody looking at a screen with that game on it.
No, that's different. Super Mario Brothers is not first-person perspective.
I'm looking at the screen.
But you're not you. You're Mario.
Did we win?
In that game.
Okay. Anyway, where were we?
Does this have multiplayer?
If it does, that's not what it's really known for, and that's not how it's usually played.
Can you see the character that you control on the screen?
No.
Okay. Is it an RPG?
No.
Okay.
Is it part of a larger series?
Yes.
Is it a first-person shooter?
No.
But wait, so it is first-person, or at least you can't see your character.
No.
So I took that to mean first person, but not a first person shooter. So adventure game seems likely.
You cannot see your character, which it sounds like potentially a strategy game. It's not thought of as a PC first game, so it's not an RTS.
Yeah. So are there any, like, I don't know, Telltale could be in the mix here?
Those games you see your player character on the screen.
Those you do.
Good point. But I'm trying to think of other. Okay. I mean, is it an adventure game?
No.
Okay.
That's 10.
You don't see your character, not an FPS, not an adventure game, not an RPG.
Huh. Okay.
Does that count if you can't, if your character's in a vehicle all the time?
What if you are a car?
If you were a car and you could have seen yourself, I would have said yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Do you, if you're playing a racing game, like Gran Turismo, there's no drivers inside the cars. The cars are just empty. Are you the car? Yeah. Who are you?
Yeah,
you're like Rocket League. I think you're just the car, right?
Yeah.
Well, look, in this case, you cannot see the character you play.
Then who was car?
Okay.
What's car's name? I wouldn't mind getting genre down. It just seems like it'd be like we're almost there,
right?
With strategy and.
I mean, it could be a strategy game of some kind. But
is this a strategy game of some kind?
No.
Okay.
Well, so it's not a shooter. It's not a strategy game, and it's not
adventure
or RPG
or RPG.
You and can't see your character,
RPGs, so it knocks out.
So it's a puzzle game.
That's what it feels like.
Okay. This is, how many questions are we on?
You've done 11.
Oh boy, really?
Yeah.
Is it a puzzle game?
Yes.
Oof. All right.
So it could be The Witness.
Could be that's a really good candidate.
Could be what? Peggle 2.
Well, what are the popular exactly? Well, no, he said it's part of a series though.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
He did.
So it could be Peggle 2.
Could not be The Witness.
After 2008?
Yeah. Peggle 2 was.
You wouldn't choose Peggle 2.
Peggle 2 is Xbox. He loves Peggle. Launch team. I know. Launch window.
Zuma.
Could be Zuma. I like me some Zuma.
I know we're going too deep for what this game probably is.
Okay, but
is.
When I
it's
hear puzzle games, there's two kinds of puzzle games, right? There's a matching blocks and making things disappear puzzle game, and then a puzzle game where you're like solving problems.
Right.
Is this
how, like you're saying?
I guess that's more of like an adventure puzzle game when we already said it's not an adventure game.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably Candy Crush or something fun like that.
That's not on PC.
It's not on PC, yeah.
But it's your
Candy Crush is not in any way?
Maybe there's a flat.
What about Bejeweled?
Bejeweled is on PC.
Is this the block matchy style of puzzle game?
Yes. Okay.
Block matchy.
So it could be Bejeweled.
After 2008, it's got to be.
I think Candy Crush is a really good bet.
But not on PC though.
Yeah, good point.
Unless it is, and we're just wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
So it's not Zuma, nor is it. It's the Egyptian-themed Zuma clone where you're shooting the marble. So it's not a marble shooting game; it's a block matchy game.
Right. I mean, I don't know if Peggle falls into because it's like matchy with.
No, that's Pachinko.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I don't see what this could be outside of Bejeweled and Candy Crush. But
is it a PopCap game?
No.
Okay, it is not Bejeweled. It is not. It is not any of those.
And what are the more recent, like really popular, puzzly Joe games?
And it could be some variant of Tetris.
Yeah.
It could be Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Yep. That's a good one.
Could be Puyo Puyo Tetris.
But he said it wasn't made in Japan.
But that's not on PC either.
Yes, it is.
They ported.
Oh, it is. That's really.
They ported it recently.
That's really neat.
Yeah. And made
in Japan.
Tom said that when he said the port played flawlessly, but since there's no game quitting on Switch, you just press the home button. There's no way to close the game when you open it on PC. he had like Alt F4 out of it. I'm sure they patched that in, but like when he was playing it, that was how.
I love it. Well, we have a lot of questions to get to a puzzle game that's contemporary.
Yeah, I'm a little worried that we're going to blow it.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, we should absolutely get this one.
Hmm.
Is it
Dr. Mario? Is it Dr.
Wait,
Luigi?
Wait. It's block matchy. I mean, I said that half as a joke, but like that eliminates like threes and a lot of like the more popular puzzle games from the last few years.
Do you think threes counts?
No, it's not block matchy.
It's not. Well, it is a matching game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
Squares.
So it's not.
What
like
about Picross?
2048.
Well, that's
I wouldn't
not
call
on
that block
PC
matchy
either.
I wouldn't call threes.
The PC thing
matchy.
Makes this really tough.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily rule out threes, especially since Damon thinks that Fallout Shelter is a first-person game.
Yeah, does this game have maths in it?
Is there numbers? Are you messing with numbers in this game?
No.
Okay, now I would rule out threes.
That's 50.
And 2048. Do you guys know that threes has an ending? Do you
know
this, Damon?
That, yeah.
Have you seen the video?
We talked about this. I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
Is there? Do we need to know if it's on Steam or not?
I'm still trying to think about, did Candy Crush or something like that come to PC? Is this generally thought of as a mobile game?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's like, I mean, so there's like two dots. There's Candy Crush,
Angry Birds,
the Angry Birds.
That's not magic. And who makes Candy Crush? It's King, right? So we can ask if that's the developer.
Is this made by King?
Yes.
You're crushing candy in this game?
Yes.
Sick Candy Crush.
Before Candy Crush came to mobile in 2012, it came to PC first.
I did not realize that.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, I'm glad you guys got there.
Then they got bought by Activision for like $500 million.
It was more than that. It was like $2 billion or something like that, yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I think the full title is actually Candy Crush Saga. Developed and published by King, 2012, PC and mobile game.
There are two Candy Crush sequels.
Also drawn, yeah, that's why I said it's part of a series.
Yeah,
no,
great.
No one.
Candy Crush Soda Saga.
I don't think they were.
So I know about Soda Saga.
I don't think they were as popular though, were they?
Oh,
I think they're still going strong. I think it's one of those things where it just has like a low level of popularity that just never goes away. Mm-hmm. It's been replaced maybe a little bit by like Gardenscapes is a big hit.
Who was trying to trick us with that one?
That was Chris. He said we don't do very many mobile games, so yeah. And it's one of the most popular games in the world. So.
Yeah,
is it still?
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I see people playing that and Pokemon Go on my bus every day. Mm-hmm. People play the bus stops because if you're moving in a vehicle, Pokemon Go knows you're moving too fast to be on foot, so it won't really let you do it. But at bus stops, I see people like getting what do they call the Pokestops and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And Dan, to clarify, when the game was Fallout Shelter, and Justin's question was, "Is this game played from a first-person perspective?" I said, I think that's how you're supposed to think about the game. It wasn't like a hard yes. Although if it's not first person, I would like to know what it is.
That is a God view game.
Dan invented this term.
Which, again,
to win this argument with you, Dan invented that term this morning.
I definitely did not.
So I would like to know what Justin thinks about this real quick before we go. In Populous, you are a deity looking down on your people mm-hmm. and affecting their lives. Mm-hmm. Is that a first-person game?
I mean, in the case of Populous, probably yes.
Oh!
So different RTS games different RTS games handle this in a different way.
I understand.
Like,
I understand.
Some have you're in some, like, mothership looking down on the battlefield directly, but then some people just don't bother. They hand-wave away the perspective of what you're seeing, and it's just an abstraction for you being some battlefield commander, you know, running the show.
And every RTS is that perspective, and you are playing as the commander, but it's not a first person perspective because your character is not actually floating up there.
But sometimes they are. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, in like Black and White, technically.
Yep. All right. So let me.
I don't know. I think of like if you were actually viewing, you know, through the eyes of a god, you would see everything because you're omniscient.
But hey, the game is just showing you one.
Screen.
The game Populous is just showing you one view at a time. They're not showing you everything else.
In Super Tecmo Bowl, if you choose the Bears, are you Mike Ditka?
Are you the coach?
Yeah.
No, because you control the player.
As the coach?
But, yeah.
The coach
is the one that told the players what to do before they started the play.
You're the coach when you pick the play, and then you're the quarterback when you throw the ball.
So you're the ghost of Mike Ditka inhabiting the bodies of the players.
he possesses them.
They stiffen up shamble to their positions.
It's a lot like Mario Odyssey in that respect.
I like that you pick Tecmo Bowl, not games. Madden, by the way.
Yeah, well.
Before we go this week, I wanted to let you know I have a new song out now. As many of you know, I've been collaborating with former GameScoop guest Ryan Geddes for many years. He writes lyrics, and I put them to music and sing them. We have a new name for this venture, Color Computer, and a new synth-pop song out now called Orisa. Orisa by Color Computer is available now in your favorite music service. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon, this is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
I never told you I was broken, that I'd never be the same. So many words were left. I'm always picking up the pieces and putting them away. Somewhere I'll never find them in parallel.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.